Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 21 of Season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the Big Daily Podcast, where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is a guest that I've been trying to get on for seven seasons, and I finally got him on the eighth season. So apparently he broke down and decided to either say yes or, you know, just... Maybe it's actually a movie that he likes. I don't know. So I want to welcome Walt Murray, the second half of the Wilder ride to the show. Welcome to the show, Walt.
Well, Rob, thanks for having me. You definitely, by having me as a guest, are going to FUBAR your way through this episode and the next couple. So, but I appreciate you being tenacious. I've had kind of a wild few years, so I appreciate you.
You are one of the wilder guys, so that's
bringing
fine.
Me on.
You are one of the wilder guys, so that's expected.
Yeah, and we live up to our name.
So. That's true. Hey, why isn't that what you're supposed to do? I live up to my name, Movie Rob, because I just watch and talk about movies. So, you know, living up to a name is not that difficult. You know, if it's something that you like doing, what can I tell you?
Yeah, maybe we should have named it something a little less loaded and our lives would be a little calmer, but that's just not how we do things.
Nah, that would take all the fun out of it, I guess.
Yes, it would.
Yeah, no need to do that. No need to do that. So why don't you actually start? Why don't you tell people a little bit about your history with this movie? I get the impression that you're a big fan, but, you know.
I'm a big, big fan of this movie. And I remember probably a year before this movie came out, I was talking to a friend of mine and another big movie buff, and we were talking about World War II movies, and I remember saying there just don't seem to be any really good World War II movies coming out. And he said, you know, I just heard about this Tom Hanks movie. Looks like it's going to be great. And then he and I, my wife at the time, his wife, a couple other people went to see this in the movies and at the movie theater. And I remember just from the opening to close of this movie being completely blown away by it. Every aspect of this movie captured me, and I remember just sitting in stunned silence at the end, and the whole theater, you could have heard a pin drop. I can't tell you how many times I've watched this movie over the years. I make it a point every Memorial Day to watch. Mm-hmm. So probably for the last 15 years or so, I've watched it every Memorial Day, then at least probably once another time during the year. So it is one of those movies that you could spend a lifetime unpacking. There is just so much here. And I am kind of a World War II history buff. I've done a lot of reading on World War II. So this movie is just right in my wheelhouse. It is awesome and sad. And I mean, just such an emotional roller coaster. So yeah. Appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk about it.
No, I'm glad that you're here for it. You know, that's, as everyone already knows from the past, 20 episodes, that I'm a big fan of this movie too, and that's why I'm breaking it down this way, you know, especially the stuff that we've been breaking down over the last few weeks. You know, in some aspects of it is gruesome, but it also it's part of the history and part of the heroism of old the real men who these characters embody. You know.
Yes, I agree. And you wonder when you do one of these movie by minute podcasts, will the movie stand up to the scrutiny of movie by minute? I'm guessing, I've not, you know, you haven't released any episodes yet, but I'm betting this movie does stand up
to for sure.
Movie by minute scrutiny.
For sure. I got it. In all honesty, I mean, I'm obviously a little biased, but so far, all eight of my seasons have stood up to the test of movies by minute. From my perspective and from, you know, the perspective, the fact that people keep coming back. So it means that it's working. Exactly. All right. So minute 21 begins with Miller trying to get his men moving and ends with Jackson praying as he aims. So we ended things on Friday with, Miller trying to figure out how he's going to, you know, get his men off of this, over this next hurdle, you know, there's you know, three gunmen in like a nest, you know, up on top of the hill. And you know, and the comment was made, and we discussed this last week, you know, that it's basically every man that he's sending out is just getting shot and killed, which I never even thought about until I started doing this, you know, so I did the research for it last week. You know, the whole idea that you know, the whole comments about you know, firing squad and you know, might as well give him a blindfold and stuff like that. It's just, you know, it only hit me just then that all these men that he mentions their name and that he says they're all getting shot. You know, it's not that they've moved to a different place and they're, you know.
These guys are, he is giving the orders that to put these guys in harm's way, and some of them are literally paying for it with their lives. That
Right.
is
Even though they
a
don't show it,
that
they
is
don't.
a
Right. And the great
no.
thing is they don't show us. They show us the reaction of Miller and Harvey. Now that's it. There's nothing, you know. They in some ways you can say that they missed the opportunity, but I think that's the point. You know, they don't have to show us everything. They can just tell us. And you know, we see by the expression on Miller's face, you know, about the fact that he's the one who has to choose which of his men are going the next, you know, the next group, and every single time. And you know, there's a chance that some of those men aren't gonna make it, you know, through whatever task or mission that he's giving them, which goes to the idea of, you know, that's the that's the whole idea of command in military. You have to make the decision and hope for the best.
Yeah, and it really doesn't matter. And you see this on his face, that he has that moment of frustration and then says, Jackson, here's what you're going to do.
Right.
And he's had to plug the right man with the right skills into the right place to kill the enemy, to keep his guys alive and keep moving. That's a, there probably is not a job with a weightier a weightier role than Captain Miller has in that moment.
Correct. It's 100%. So, I mean, the minute starts off with him screaming, "Go, go, go! Come on, come on!" And he's trying to get the, you know, the guys to move through to the to, you know, to get to the next stage. You know, it sort of reminds me of like a video game, you know, where you have to just keep getting going level by level. So here, you know, they've you know, up until now they had the level where they started, you know, in the Higgins boats, and then the first level was getting out of the Higgins boats. Then the second level was, okay, how do you deal with getting out of the water? And then the third level is, okay, now you're on the beach. How do you start moving forward on the beach? And you finally get to a safe spot on the beach, and then you got to move to the next one. You know, it's constantly, you know, again, that's the idea of you know, of infantrymen in a battle. Little by little, you have to, you know, you only can take control once you have, you know, boots on the ground in that particular situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And you, as a commander, Captain Miller here, and Sergeant Horvath, you have to take that chaos and harness it and get those guys running through it to their next objective. And you know you're going to lose guys along the way. These guys know that their life is in danger every second. And even when they expose themselves, they know that if they stay where they are, they're dead. They've got to move forward. There is just so much about this. And I think I've never been in combat, but the chaos, the craziness, the insanity of it, I think is captured as well as you can capture it on film.
Yeah, exactly. And then so we see the men run by Miller, you know, to try and, I guess, get through the pass or whatever it is. And you know, we then see that they start shooting up at these guys who are, you know, in this bird's eye nest or whatever you want to call it, to really no avail. You know, they're you know, we see Mellish and Caparzo, they're both shooting. And we hear the sounds of the ricochets, and we hear the pings of finishing the M1 cartridge that's being ejected at the end. And they're really just not able to do anything here. And while this is going on, we hear Miller, saying, "Come on, come on, come on." He goes, "Go, God damn it!" And then we get like a fraction of a second where we can see on his face the sheer frustration that, what he's doing is just not working. He's got to think of something else. He's
Yeah, and you've got to get rounds on that machine gun to hopefully keep their heads down, keep them distracted, hopefully hit something or someone. But you're right, it's really having no effect other than maybe distraction and keeping their heads down, but it is not working.
right. And then we get to see his makeshift periscope once again, where he sticks his hand out from the side, and it's a great shot because we just see it from the, I guess, the perspective of the place where the guys were just sent that are probably now wounded or dead. That you'd look back and you see, a hand reach out behind this I don't even know what you would call it, this beachhead or whatever it is. Or maybe it's part of a building or something like that, when a hand just protrudes out holding a bayonet that has something stuck to it, which we now know is a probably a shaving kit mirror or something like that.
Yeah.
That that's and he's looking at it and trying to figure out, okay, what, as in all of my training, what is going to help me right now? How are we going to be able to move forward? And then the shot changes and we see it from the perspective of Miller, where he's looking into that, and we again, you can see the look on his face. And Tom Hanks, he does such an amazing job in this movie.
You can't say enough about Tom Hanks. He is one of the great actors of our time, and this movie is so indicative of the talent that he has, the commitment to the character. He is just phenomenal through the whole movie.
Yeah, completely. But again, what I love here is that we see the expressions on his face are just telling us, telling us what's going through his mind right now. And he's just trying to figure it out. Like, how do I get to the next objective? Like, what do I need to do? And then he turns around and goes, "Jackson." And we hear, "Sir." And he goes, "Do you see that impact crater?" And what I love is that he's still holding the bayonet out, and Jackson gets close to him and is looking over, and they're both looking at this mirror. So he's saying, "You see that impact crater over there?" And he goes, "Yes, sir." "So that should give you complete defilade from the machine gun position. Get in there and give me some fire discipline. Wait for my command." And again, this is great. He's thought of some way to possibly change change their fate, change the perspective of what they're doing. And he's like, okay, I'm going to use Jackson here. Jackson's the guy who's going to do it.
Yeah, and Jackson's got to be thinking, what did I do to piss you off?
But the truth is, based on what we know of Jackson, that probably is not true. He
No, you're
probably
probably right.
Jackson is probably one of the guys. If he would have sent Ryben would have said, "What did I do to piss you off?"
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're
Jackson
right.
Jackson's a guy, and he says it later in the movie. You put me within range of Adolf Hitler, and this
We're
war's over.
going. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he is definitely the guy who, no questions asked, I'm going to go do what I'm told and go make this right.
Right. Exactly. So he mentions the idea of a fire discipline. Do you know what a fire discipline is? From a military
My
perspective.
understanding, yeah, my understanding is for fire discipline is that you're firing accurately, you're putting rounds on a particular target, and that he's basically, he's not there to just throw rounds up at this thing. He's there to hit particular targets.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, the official The official description of what a fire discipline is, it's a system of communication in the military, primarily for directing artillery. By
Oh,
definition,
okay.
fire discipline is the language of fire control. It consists of words, phrases, rules, and conventions which have specific meanings and which result in some definite action being taken with the guns. The aim of fire discipline is to ensure that in response to calls for fire from a forward observer, the appropriate action is taken at all the different levels. So, I mean, what he's talking about here is that, give me some fire discipline, meaning that you're going to be in a particular place and you're gonna give us some, you're gonna shoot from a different vantage point than we are, in order, and like you said, you're gonna be able to do it calmly and, because you're also going to be a lot closer to than everyone else. So you're gonna might have a better shot.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Yeah.
Completely. And I mean, it's great the way that they do it. And so at this point, so he starts getting ready, and he puts down he puts in the mirror. And he and Jackson basically switch places so that Jackson is at the edge of this thing that's basically keeping them safe, this
Yeah,
wall or whatever it
it's
is.
hard to tell. Is it a bunker or part of a bunker? It's hard to tell what
It
that
looks
is.
like it might be part of a bunker because you do see the metal beams, coming out of the
Yeah,
sides.
all the rebar, all the bent up rebar and
That's right.
everything.
So it's
Yeah.
something. Maybe this is what. Well, this is probably what was destroyed when they were using the Bangalores. So,
Oh, yeah. You know what that, I bet you're right. Yeah.
that probably makes more sense. But so basically, he puts his hand on Jackson's back, to I guess hold him back at some point, and then be able to release him when needed. And then they give us a great shot of Barry Pepper, who plays Jackson. Where
Yeah.
he then reaches down and pulls out his dog tags, and attached to his dog tags we see a cross, which in the second week we saw him do the same thing. When he was on when he was on the boat trying to get out, and we saw that he kissed, he did the exact same thing. He kissed his cross, getting ready to get out of here. And you see that he sort of mumbles a little bit here, but mumbles some sort of prayer or whatever it is. But we'll have to wait a little while to hear the full prayer. And then at that point, Miller just moves to the side and completely exposes himself in order to draw fire for Jackson to get out of there. And then Miller screams, "Go!" And Jackson then takes off. And it's a great shot because on the one hand you see Miller dive back down, and you see Jackson start taking off in the direction that he's supposed to. And they give us a shot of the three Germans that are up on top shooting at them. Did you notice that one of them basically taps another one on the head to basically tell
Yes,
him, I
and
think
gets
he's,
his attention to fire the other
that's
direction.
right. He's basically giving him, an indication that, that there's this guy, Jackson, who's, who we have to try and get also, which I think is great. Again, the attention to detail here is just amazing.
It is amazing. It is great. And one of the things about the scene that I really appreciate with Captain Miller is that it shows that he is not afraid to expose himself to the same danger that he's calling on his men to expose themselves to.
Right.
And the writers did not lose the characters in all this. I think it would be easy to do that with all the chaos and everything of the scene. Captain Miller's character just really highlights through this his character and leadership.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, again, I served in the in the Israeli military where the idea is that in most conflicts, and obviously we've seen it over the last year, many of the commanders are the first ones to get shot because they're the ones leading, leading the charge,
Right.
as opposed to being in the back. That's part of, that's part of the language here from that perspective.
Yeah.
It's the idea of follow me, which not every military is deals with the same way. There are a lot of military, a lot of armies where the idea is that the commanders, even the lower commanders, are the ones who stay back, because you need them for later. So here's a perfect example of Miller, leading by example from that perspective.
Well, and if you look at what happened on D-Day, and I'm sure you've either gotten into this or will, that the Nazis didn't have that kind of command. They had to wait. They had to see what, they had to wait for their commanders to give commands from on high, and that's one of the reasons why they didn't have any armor fighting on the beachheads.
Correct.
And where here you have a captain like Miller who's able to make decisions on the fly. And to really lead his men.
Correct. Correct. And so then the gunner on top, switches and starts shooting to in the other direction, trying to get Jackson. And then they give us a shot of, Jackson running and, zigzagging between some rocks and stuff like that. And the obviously the special effects are great here, because you see that from the special effects they keep missing him in every single thing until he reaches whatever this impact crater is. We don't really get a good view of the impact crater itself, so we're not really sure how big it is, but I guess it's big enough for him to get there to do what he needs to do. And again, all this smoke and dust, this and fog and all this stuff around there just adds to the thrilling aspect of watching this happen.
And it does make it gives you that feel that you're right there.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Again,
And
this whole movie does that because it's filmed in a documentary style, which makes us feel that we are right there. The camera is us, that type of thing,
yeah,
which works
it's
extremely
definitely
well.
harrowing. You're exhausted by the end of the scene.
Okay, understandable. That's understandable. And at this point, they give us back Miller and Hargrove, and Mike then says to him, "Captain, if your mother saw you do that, she'd be very upset." Which is a
Yeah.
great line for someone like Tom Sizemore to throw out there.
That is a
I love
great
it.
line.
Yeah. And it's funny that he calls him Captain, because it's l later on, they do call each other by their first names. So it's I guess, it's a part of the I guess basically where they are. So he, keeps himself in check, and we're friends, but we're not friends, type of thing. You're
Right.
Captain. And Miller gives a great response. He goes, "I thought you were my mother."
That is one of my favorite lines from this movie. So, and I just love that in the middle of all of this, that the two of them are able to banter back and forth like that, and to have that joke between the two of them in the middle of this mess.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It does.
It's because they're trying to show that there is camaraderie here.
Yeah.
And
And
that's what you
there
need.
is. And yes, absolutely.
That's sort of the whole, goes with the whole theme so we're 3 years away from it when this came out, but the idea of Band of Brothers,
Right.
these are guys that you've been with for a while and you know them very well, that type of thing. And you would give your life for them, and just as they would give their lives for you, that type of thing.
Right.
And then
Yeah.
he basically Miller crawls back into safety as he's doing that, and then the shot changes, and we get to see Jackson, lining up the shot, and he starts a little bit of a prayer. He says, "Be not thou far from me, O Lord." Now, do you have any idea? I don't know how religious you are or not, but are you familiar at all with this line? Do you know where it comes from?
I know that it's a psalm. I cannot, for the life of me, I should have looked it up. I completely forgot to. But
Well, you didn't need to
to
because I
answer your
did.
question, yes, I'm pretty religious, and but I did know. I'm pretty sure it's a psalm.
Yes, it's Psalm 22, verse 19 is where he starts, which is for anyone who's unfamiliar. So the Psalms is part of the Old Testament, and it was written by King David. There are 150 Psalms, so this is Psalm 22, and basically the part that he says here is, "But be not thou far from me, O Lord, O my strength. Hast thee to help me." So we'll get a little bit into that tomorrow with the whole idea. But it's great that here we've seen this character already twice kiss his cross as he's getting ready to go into battle type of thing, and here he's calmly trying to line up the shot, and as he's doing that, he is drawing on his spirituality for this whole thing. Which again,
And
you just
I think
mentioned
that
a
is the first time he quotes
yes.
scripture, I believe, in the
Yes,
movie.
it's the first time that he quotes scripture. We've seen him move his lips, but we've never been able to hear what he says until now. This is the first time that we can actually hear what he's saying. But again, it's great because the we hear him whisper this. And we hear all around him all the sounds of the bullets all around and stuff like that. But he's just keeping his calm with his spirituality through this whole thing as he's getting ready to take this shot. And I think it's also a great place to end the minute because they zoom in on him as the minute is ending.
Yeah, and it's kind of this quiet second in the midst of all this.
Yes.
And of course, that'll
Which
bleed
I think
into
is on purpose.
tomorrow.
I think it's on purpose that they give us the quiet second because I think it's the idea that okay, he's at peace with himself right now as he's doing this. And that's why there's quiet all around. It's like I recently just rewatched the movie For the Love of the Game with Kevin Costner. It was a baseball movie. And they show that he has a way of tuning out everyone, all the sounds around him. And he just like yeah, I'm trying to remember the phrase right now, even though I just saw this movie 3 days ago. Clear, he says clear the something. I don't remember what it is. Clear the mechanism. That's what he says. He says clear the mechanism, and then like complete silence all around him, in order to be able to focus. So it's sort of I look at what Jackson is doing here and I say, okay, that seems very similar. That he is in his own world right now. Just him, his gun, his periscope, not periscope, his sight, the scope on the gun,
The scope, yeah.
and trying to find the guy that trying to find his next target, that type of thing. Sorry, I like the way that they do that.
I thought it was great too, and just listening to and watching the way this minute flows, where you do have so much chaos, and then ending that minute with that second or two of silence and him so focused, it's a really interesting contrast.
Yes, that's true. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you want to mention about this minute?
No, I think we've definitely covered all my notes.
Okay, great. Excellent. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guests will give their top five John Williams scores. So Walt, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Of all the movie by minute episodes I've been on, this was the most challenging question, was narrowing it down to five. So, five, the minute I wrote this list, would be my fifth would be the theme to Jurassic Park. The theme to Indiana Jones would be fourth. Third, I couldn't narrow it down, but I would say the entire soundtrack to The Empire Strikes Back. Star Wars main theme would be number two, and then my top one is Jaws, the Jaws theme.
Okay, and, I mean, that's a very solid list. That, most people's lists are going to be very similar, you know, because...
Yeah, I think so.
You know, because when you look at, John Williams' work, it's amazing. There's so much to say about all of it, stuff like that.
But so much.
In general, you know, people are able to somewhat narrow it down when needed. what other scores would you put into your honorary mentions?
Oh gosh, going through his list, and you had sent me his IMDb list, and some of them I had really forgotten that he had even done, and he had, I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. There was one for a television show that I had forgot. Oh, The Paper Chase.
Okay.
And I had gone back when I was going through the IMDb list, I was just listening at random to to some of the older stuff that he had composed and done. And one of the things that stood out to me for him, even, you know, going through like the old TV shows and stuff like that, The Paper Chase was a little bit more somewhat serious, not completely serious, but he does such a great job of scoring things in a way that is very appropriate to that show or movie. And I really appreciate the way that he is able to take something that, I mean, even a movie like 1941, which is kind of a goofy comedy set at the beginning of World War II, make that a little bit more lighthearted, but fit the film. Of course, all the Star Wars scores and everything that he's worked on are all great. E.T. would have to be up there. I had even forgotten that he was the conductor for the soundtrack for the movie Taps. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, movie. I love that movie. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. Great, great movie. He composed Superman. He composed, he conducted Home Alone. I mean, it was, you could put 30 different things on this list.
Right. I'm always amazed that his very first Oscar nomination was for Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
And I was like, right. How is John Williams connected to Fiddler on the Roof? You know, and it's like, wow, goes all the way back to, you know, that far. Amazing.
Yeah.
Truly amazing.
And Schindler's List too, as powerful as that movie is, the soundtrack to it is just, it goes so perfectly with it. Haunting. And you would have a hard time finding something bad that
right.
he did. Something that doesn't fit the movie and isn't awesome.
Yes. I would agree with you on that. All right. So, Walt, you want to tell people where they can find Walt Murray?
Yeah, you can find Alan Sanders and I on a podcast called The Wilder Ride. We were crazy enough to try to work through the films of Gene Wilder one minute at a time. We got a little sidetracked when COVID hit, and my mom was sick at the time. I had a lot going on in my personal life. And so we began to interview people. We started interviewing friends and family and just interesting people, ended up with some actors and actresses, some folks that make and publish music, just kind of a wide variety of people. One of the writers for Family Guy and just all kinds of really interesting people. So that's The Wilder Ride. You can find us on The Wilder Ride listeners group on Facebook and anywhere that you listen to podcasts, just type in The Wilder Ride.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, Earn this.
My solitude, you